Blog Talk Radio.
Interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Welcome, friends, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and seekers of the truth. But whoever you are, I know one thing that we all share in common. Don't we all want to know the truth? The truth about what's really going on here in this crazy, confusing, chaotic world. So welcome to the 613th edition of SDG, Sola Dea Gloria. And the title of this message today is 2023 Endgame Update Number 29. And a bit later in this message, folks, we're going to tie it all into the beast of Revelation chapter 13. The Bible says in Revelation chapter 13, verse 1, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and saw a beast rise out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy." So I hope you stay tuned to learn about our enemy, the Antichrist, also known as the Beast of Revelation chapter 13. And we're going to look into his sudden appearance on this global stage, his satanic ancestry, and his seductive appeal to the masses. But the bottom line, folks, is that as believers, we may be in this world, but we're not of this world. And as God's people, we're just passing through. So let's all refuse to be destroyed by this Luciferian all-out war on humanity. And be sure to stay tuned for the latest news that the mainstream media will never tell you as we dive deeper and deeper into America's new 9/11 events, which are unfolding as if they were on slow motion, but on steroids. But remember, folks, it all began with that lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. And as we do every week, let's get started with something of a review from last week's episode. And I don't hear any music, folks. Let's try something else. I think we lost all of our audio, because I certainly don't hear it. Wow. This always seems to happen, folks. Anyways, how can we do this? I don't know how we're going to be able to do this, because for some reason, Stream Deck just quit working on me. That's not good. Let's see if anything else works. Let's see if Gomer works. We're getting nothing from Podcaster Pro, folks. Wow, I don't even know if I'm on the air. I really don't. Let's see if anything works on the board.
I've been into fashion since I can remember.
So the board still works, but we're not getting anything off Podcaster Pro. I do apologize, folks, because I do not know what's going on. And without these clips, I really can't do this show. I have one idea. Here's what I'm going to do. Let's pray that the Lord's willing to help me with this. Let's say that we could put on Jeremy Camp. I do apologize, like I said. So what I'm going to do is I can't even find Jeremy Camp. What a mess. Let's just try Jeremy Camp. I can find him. Can't hear Jeremy Camp on there. So what we're going to do is shut them off, and I'm wasting your time, and I do apologize. Let's put
Jeremy.
We're living in a very defining time in our generation, where fear is creeping in and the uncertainty of the unknown is everywhere.
I can see what is raging at my feet. I can feel the breath of those surrounding me. I can hear the sound of nations rising up. We will not be overtaken. We will not be overcome. I can walk.
There's an urgency like never before in my heart to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ. To show a world that looks like there is no hope, that in Jesus alone you will find that hope and peace. To stand up in the midst of adversity and tribulation, and to show the unconditional love of our Savior while not shying away from speaking the truth of God's Word. Cry out for change in our world, but many times we are left asking, how can I make a difference? What do I do next? The truth is, we can do nothing. In our own strength and our own power, we will fail. But Jesus himself said to the disciples, I leave with you my spirit. In Romans 8:11 it says, if the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, he will also give life to your mortal bodies through his spirit who dwells in you. Let's step out in his power. Let's proclaim the name of Jesus in boldness and love. And when the attacks come from all sides, walk in the understanding that greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world, because the enemy has been defeated.
Okay, folks, let's see if we got it back. Let's just do a check. And what we want to do right now is get into a review of something from last week. So before we get into our news update, let's review something from last week's episode. Now, that blockbuster movie, The Sound of Freedom, it continues to defy all odds. I think it's broken $100 million now. It's breaking box office records day in and day out. It continues to beat the final packet, whatever you want to call it, in the Raiders of the Lost Ark series. You know, this blockbuster movie is waking people up. Even with no mainstream media support, in fact, in spite of all the mainstream media's all-out efforts to stop it. So you got to ask the question, why? Well, just this past week at the Real American Voice news station, or whatever you want to call it, RAV, over on their Twitter account, they posted Tim Ballard's speech from the Turning Point USA conference that just concluded a few weeks ago. And you have to hear this, folks. It is literally dynamite. Now, let me just set the stage for you, okay? So you've got this movie that was fought by Disney and other studios for six, eight years, something like that, and it finally comes out. Now, Tim Ballard is the hero behind the story. He's the main character that was played by Caviezel. So just have a listen to this.
Why do they not want you to see Sound of Freedom? And they're going to expose the truth. And what truth? What conversation are they afraid to have? I'm going to tell you what it is. I was a few weeks ago, I was on the Hill talking to a group of congressional Republicans, and they were asking me about the border. And they were just appalled, as I am, as you are. In the last 2 years alone, 85,000 unaccompanied minors, thousands of them, according to CBP data, under 5 years old. Okay, what is a three-year-old showing up at the port of entry or at the border alone? What's going on? Oh, and by the way, there's a bracelet around them. You seen this? I mean, they're branding the kids. I mean, this is an organized effort by criminal organizations to traffic children. And 85,000 of those kids show up at the border over the last 2 years, and they're lost. They're disappeared. And here's the important thing. There's something I call the economy of pedophilia.
Most people have
okay?
no...
Did you know that the United States is the number one consumer of child sex material in the world? Okay, so we are the demand. If 85,000 children show up at our border and are released into that economy of pedophilia, what do you think is going on? And worst yet, you know what happens? I've been down there. The kids, the traffickers give the kids a little piece of paper with a name on it of the sponsor. And Health and Human Services gets those kids by policy. All they can do is call the number, and George Smith or whoever picks up the phone. Oh, yeah, Jose Gonzalez, yeah, I'm the sponsor. Okay, they used to have to come pick the kid up. It's harder, by the way. It's harder to adopt a cat from a shelter than it is to come pick up a kid at the border. Do you know that? And now George Smith doesn't have to pick the kid up anymore. Your taxpayer dollars are putting that kid on a plane, train, automobile, whatever it is, and shipping that child to the sponsor given by a child trafficker in Mexico, and the United States government is therefore complicit. And the United States government is fulfilling and completing the final leg of a child trafficking experience. That's our country right now. And that's why they don't want you to see Sound of Freedom. They do not want to be compelled to have the conversation. But I told the congressman, because they said, Tim, why can't we wake up the left? These are children. And I said, you're not telling the whole story. Spiritual warfare, it's all encompassing. It's not just about the 85,000 kids. You know what else is about? It's about sexualizing our kids. They don't want to be confronted with that truth, that they are wanting to give our children pornography at third grade and call it sex education. Sexualize their brains. They don't want you to know about the fact that the pedophile network, which I've been hunting for 2 decades, they are salivating right now at all the leftist policies because it's all the things that they have wanted to have accomplished for the last 2 decades, and they're doing it for them. Sexualize kids. They want the kids sexualized because they need those kids to want to have sex. At 12, 13, 14 years old, another big point for the pedophiles is kids should consent to vote. Kids can consent to everything. Why? Because they want sexualized kids to now have the legal authority to consent to do anything. And why are they loving this trench foist on children? Because it's all about consent. We're being told by the leftists that children can and should have the ability to consent and demand that their bodies be mutilated, that their genitalia be extracted. I mean,
wow is all I can say, folks. So let me get this right. The Biden regime is complicit in child trafficking at the border. You heard what he said. Our tax dollars are putting that kid on a plane, train, automobile, and shipping that child to the quote-unquote sponsor given by a child trafficker in Mexico. Bottom line, folks, as Ballard said, the United States government is fulfilling and completing the final leg of a child's trafficking experience. This is sick, folks, and it goes way back. This horrendous crime goes way back, way further than even the Biden regime. So let's do just a little bit of critical thinking here, folks. If a child wanders into my yard or your yard, and we keep that, you know, we snatch that child up and we keep it, wouldn't we be charged with kidnapping? But if a child wanders into the U.S. and the government keeps the child and everybody turns a blind eye, it's social justice?
What?
That's right, Paul. But shouldn't they be charged with kidnapping? Shouldn't that child be sent back to the country from whence it came? Well, not if there's another motive. And we're going to get into that a little later in the show. So with all that said, could it be that the Sound of Freedom is somehow being sabotaged? You know, a lot of people going to the movies to see this right now, there's no better way to put it, but it's a box office phenom. It is. They're experiencing what the theater operators are referring to as technical issues. There's all sorts of these reports, from lights not dimming during the screening to extra low volume or rude ushers or malfunctioning with the HVAC, you know, basically turning the theater into a sweatbox. There's even one person that described how their elevator up to the third floor of the massive mall was broken as were the escalators, and everyone had to walk up three gigantic flights of stairs to get to the movie theater. Just insane, isn't it? So anyways, along comes Paul Joseph Watson, who did a very good synopsis of this. And I thought instead of me talking, we can listen to what Paul Joseph Watson had to say, because he had some very good clips in there. And I think he addresses both the reality of these claims and what we have to be careful that we don't get caught up in. So let's have a listen to his analysis of the situation in the theaters.
Who gets this mad over an anti-child trafficking movie?
Are we the baddies?
All the usual suspects. Sound of Freedom has grossed over $85 million at the box office, despite costing only $14 million to make.
Saving kids from the dark world of child trafficking.
But feelings are running so high. There are now claims the film's being sabotaged at movie theaters, and a viral compilation seen by 8 million people. Matt Wallace highlights supposedly strange events that have been occurring at screenings. Fire alarms being mysteriously set off during the film.
May I have your attention, please? A fire has been reported in the building.
This is what happens when Red and I decide to go to the movies.
The air conditioning suddenly failing.
Just to let you guys know again, it is going to get hot.
So why is it only this one, though, not all the other ones?
Weird smells.
It's a horrible smell. It smells almost like an electrical fire.
Leaving the lights on to ruin the movie.
You literally had the lights on.
They kept the lights on the entire movie.
Who does that?
They turned all the lights on during Sound of Freedom.
The lights didn't turn off for the first 10 minutes.
Actually happening.
Can you mark free passes to come back and see it again? Hopefully without interruption. I unfortunately and apologize for the inconvenience, but we're getting it hopefully looked at later in the week.
Can I trust you?
Sorry, guys.
Really?
This is called intentional.
Yeah.
I don't want it to go to the box office gross.
The bathrooms suddenly encountering problems.
Getting refunds for the Sound of Freedom because apparently the water pressure in the bathrooms aren't working here. So no one can watch.
The movie being deleted and people being told to leave.
Tried going to see Sound of Freedom and this happened. No one left until they played the movie. They tried to give us free tickets if we left.
Along with other odd interruptions and cancellations.
And about an hour and 20 minutes into the movie, we get a random emergency evacuation.
And if people come out and complain, it's not our fault. We have to get this situated so that everybody can feel accommodated, and then we'll restart the movie, okay?
We'll restart the movie?
With many of these clips having gone viral on TikTok and Twitter, along with the whole narrative that the movie is being sabotaged, Angel Studios, the company behind Sound of Freedom, was forced to respond. They pointed out that many of the complaints originated out of screenings that were hosted by AMC Theatres, and that AMC has in fact been an outstanding partner for Angel Studios, agreeing to add additional screenings for Sound of Freedom over and above their initial commitment. Then the CEO of AMC tweeted that the movie had been screened 3,000 times at 570 theaters in a single day, calling the conspiracy theories bizarre misinformation. I mean, it's pretty clear that AMC has thrown its full support behind Sound of Freedom and isn't sabotaging the movie. But given how numerous shit-lib news outlets trashed the movie from the very beginning, denigrating it as some QAnon-inspired conspiracy guff, despite the fact that it's based on a true story, is it really beyond the realms of possibility to suggest that some deranged woke cinema staff at some local theatres, influenced by leftist media hysteria, have been personally trying to sabotage some of the screenings? Because they're frustrated over, checks notes, an anti-child trafficking movie, obviously without the AMC managers at these theatres even knowing about it. I mean, is that a fair assumption? Have you experienced any weirdness at a Sound of Freedom screening? Let me know in the comments below. Leopold.com. Now back to the video. As is normally the case, these more nebulous, hard-to-prove claims only serve to distract from a far bigger and far more disturbing scandal. Why the legacy media and the establishment reacted to this movie with so much vitriol? What are they afraid of? Well, Sound of Freedom star Jim Caviezel provided part of the answer.
During the five screenings, each screening, there was a talking going on. And I was like watching the audience going, what? The second time it happened, again, third time, talking in this one particular spot. And I'm thinking, what? Did you do something wrong or something? So then one more time it happened at the end. I was asking about the movie and I asked him about that one particular part where everybody's talking and they all cried out Epstein Island. And I went, oh, okay. Now I understand what we're up against.
Wow.
Epstein Island isn't the only sex island out there. And Tim Ballard takes down one of the films.
The most vehement legacy media denunciations of the movie come from, let's say, people with very interesting backgrounds. Prime amongst them, Noah Berlatsky, who slammed Sound of Freedom in an article published by Bloomberg, fuming at the film because it allows the, quote, conspiratorial right, room to run wild. The same article was also published by the Washington Post. Fascinating how Berlatsky would get big mad at an anti-child trafficking movie, given what some say is his documented history of trying to normalize pedophilia. Berlatsky infamously once tweeted that, quote, pedophiles are essentially a stigmatized group, are designated as deviants and that people hate them. Yeah. And apparently that's a bad thing. Will someone think of the poor pedophiles? And as YouTuber Shoe on Head revealed, while Berlatsky went hard on Sound of Freedom, he was a big fan of a certain other controversial movie.
Turns out he's the f***ing journalist who got mad at me like a year ago for criticizing the Netflix movie Cuties.
Well, imagine my shock. In 2021, Berlatsky was named the communications director at Prostasia, an organization that laments the stigmatization of pedophiles, referring to them as MAPS, minor attracted persons.
I'm getting the word nonce.
And offering its services under the umbrella of the MAP Support Club, otherwise known in some circles as Nonceaholics Anonymous.
Nonce.
In a hit piece against another anti-child trafficking film that offended him, 2012's Eden, Berlatsky refers to underage trafficking victims as child sex workers, as if such a thing should even legitimately exist, claiming that most child trafficking victims are not coerced. On the theme of minors consenting to sex, Berlatsky wrote, quote, the fact that adolescent brains are different than older people's brains doesn't mean that older people make better decisions. His essay was filed under Sex Positivity, an Age of Consent. Berlatsky's own personal life is also very intriguing. In an article he wrote for Yahoo, we learn that his wife is both non-binary and bisexual. Then, just by a stunning coincidence and completely independent of that fact, Berlatsky's daughter came out as bisexual in middle school before announcing she was a transgender lesbian in high school. Again, just a coincidence. Berlatsky also thinks that parents are tyrants and that parents are an oppressive class like rich people or white people. Yeah, I think it's safe to say this guy's got a lot of issues. And they're not of Time magazine. Questions are now being asked about why Bloomberg chose to commission Berlatsky to write an opinion piece about Sound of Freedom, given his well-dodgy background. When Bloomberg editorial board member Tracy Walsh was asked about the controversy, she locked down her account while claims that screenings of Sound of Freedom were ruined as some kind of deliberate organized sabotage don't really stack up. The organized hostility directed at the movie by the legacy media and the establishment certainly does stack up. And there's nothing more disturbing than that.
So say whatever you may about Jim Caviezel and Mel Gibson. I know they have some shady pasts, but don't we all? Right now, I'm telling you, folks, regardless of the source of the money for this flick, regardless of these guys' background, the fact is that this movie is basically saying to the establishment, leave our children alone. And it's a very controversial movie. Speaks volumes of how far our nation has fallen. You know, anyone or any group speaking out against such a message, you know, like the Blatsky author that Bloomberg engaged, and so many in Hollywood and the mainstream media, I have one word for you, evil. Two words, pure evil. So I hope this is shattering your trust in the system, folks. I don't know if you remember, but a year ago, we played this absurd talk of some pseudo-intellectual concerning pedophiles. Let's just have a listen again.
I want to quickly summarize where we are at the moment. According to current research, pedophilia is an unchangeable sexual orientation, just like, for example, heterosexuality. No one chooses to be a pedophile No one can cease being one. The difference between pedophilia and other sexual orientations is that living out this sexual orientation will end in a disaster. Right now, most of us feel discomfort when we think about this scenario. And most of us feel discomfort when we think about pedophiles. But just like pedophiles, we are not responsible for our feelings. We do not choose them. But we are responsible for our actions. And we must make a decision. It is in our responsibility to reflect and to overcome our negative feelings about pedophiles and to treat them with the same respect we treat other people with. We should accept that pedophiles are people who have not chosen their sexuality and who, unlike most of us, will never be able to live it out freely if they want to lead an upright life. We should accept that pedophilia is a sexual preference, a thought, a feeling, and not an act.
I think that was enough. I think you heard the absurdity there. So did you hear the twist there? So we need to conform our feelings to accommodate theirs. This is the twisted system we're living in, folks. Do not trust the system. We need to be all in for Jesus. And enough said on that, folks. We have to keep moving. And right now it's time for Sister Kathy's, Brother Alex's Freaky Deaky News Update. And as we do every week, but I'm not certain for how much longer, let's get started with our coronavirus heist update.
The coronavirus, COVID-19, pandemic, the coronavirus, it's a scamdemic, they call it the great equalizer, and they were all in this together, except...
We're all in this together. Now, the reason I said I don't know how much longer, I think everything that can be said about COVID, maybe, perhaps, has been said by this point. Everything we've been warning people about since early in 2020 has basically come true. You know, folks, before we get started, I just want to take care of a little bit of housekeeping. So at the beginning of the show, and if you catch this before I upload the studio recorded link, or I should say the one that's done off the Rodecaster Pro as opposed to the Blog Talk, you're going to hear a big gap at the beginning. Right in the middle of the start of the show, Windows 11 decides to do an update on the laptop I got to operate the Rodecaster Pro and the Stream Deck. Right in the middle. So I apologize for that if you had to hear that. And also a shout out to Ingrid and Sister Kathy. Praying for Kathy's mom who's recovering from a fall. So if you could just lift up Sister Kathy's mother in prayer and Sister Kathy while you're at it. Thank you, Ingrid, for getting me Sister Kathy's new email. I've been out of touch with Sister Kathy for a while. Apparently she lost the address to, or I should say password to her Gmail account, paralandra777@gmail.com. Anyways, let's get into this update. There's a bombshell update right now from the second smartest guy in the world over on Substack. The FDA finally confirms that the modified spike protein that's used in what we euphemistically call the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines are not safe. In fact, it's more dangerous. It's more dangerous than anybody thought, folks. These unmodified spike proteins are being forced upon people through these illegal mandates. And you know, the backstory is coming out now. The Pentagon and the DOD were running a slow-kill bioweapons program, along with the CIA, the World Health Organization, Bill Gates, Fauci, and all the other frauds involved in these alphabet soup agencies. And now it's coming out by independent researchers that the graphene oxide is cytotoxic and carcinogenic, amplifying what's becoming known as turbo cancers. And we've talked about that. And it's being done by factoring P53 protein suppression by the cytotoxic C19 19 spike protein, okay? It's highly carcinogenic, folks. And if you dive deeper into this, you're going to see that this is not necessary for any other reason. Now, the FDA is claiming what was in there so we could do microscopy. No, that's not true, and that's been independently proven. So I encourage you to get over to the Second Smartest Guy in the World's Substack page and check out this bombshell update on the FDA confirming how dangerous these modified spike proteins actually are. So call them what you want, folks. A tiny vax, a jab, but let's say it the way it is. They are bioweapons. And in each of these tiny bioweapons, some of the modified spike proteins, along with this graphene and an alphabet soup of other cytotoxic chemicals, infect the cells, causing spike protein diseases that the FDA is now admitting that range from anything as diverse as these neurological disorders coming from the aggregation and the fibrillation of these proteins, keep creating all kinds of neurodegenerative diseases, all the way over to these turbo cancers and everything else in between. Bottom line, this was a weaponized program from the Pentagon and the DOD. Follow the money trail, folks. And all the federal agencies that are complicit in this have violated their constitutional mandate. And they are all serving the one world government agenda. Folks, please listen to me. It has never been more important to mop up these viral spike proteins that are circulating in your body if you took any of these jabs. Do some researching on how you can do that. Or email me at kdbeer1961@gmail.com, and I'll get you some information on it. Now, I'm not giving health advice. I'm just pointing you in the direction of some experts that can help you. I'm telling you there are inexpensive repurposed drugs and supplements of all sorts that address all of this. There's also something known as chlorine dioxide. It's a really great antiseptic, and it's being mislabeled bleach. It's not bleach, folks. Do a little research on that, or MSM. Again, not health advice, just pointing you in the right direction. And just this week, a father and his son running a quote-unquote ministry to distribute this compound to help people disinfect things has been charged and faces, I think it's like 16 years in prison. This is the oppression we're living in, folks. So all of these different things have been known to help cure victims of all these side effects from these deadly payloads delivered by this bioweapon. Like I said, from prion-based neurological issues to turbo cancers and everything else in between. Bottom line, folks, do not comply. Now, the truth is there's no way I'm just going to be able to take this out to all the blue-pilled friends and family I have. Normies, you know, non-participating characters, sheeple of this once great republic. You know, people who, despite my pleas, don't take that jab, no, no, no. People like my mother-in-law. God rest her soul. 6 weeks, 8 weeks after taking the second booster, she's gone. Please, please, do your own research. Share it with your friends and family. There are protocols out there to detoxify. And please pray for all those poor souls that don't have eyes to see and ears to hear. We need a miracle there. You know, if I think about this too long, I could actually get very mad. You know what I mean? Just listen to all the updates I've done on this show since 2020, even before the shots were available, warning people that you're going to get sick and you could die. And now people are dropping dead from these shots. And think about this. They trusted their doctors who knew better. And our warnings, all the people in the alt media, they fell on deaf ears. And the warnings we were given came from peer-reviewed journals. This technology has been out for a long time. Cytokine storms, all sorts of issues with the test animals. As far back as 2008 and 2009, I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say, well, at least it kept me out of the hospital. That may be true. If you wake up dead, you have no need for the hospital. But we have to keep moving. And right now, folks, it's time for our Kabuki Theater update.
COVID-19, George Floyd, Rice, BLM, police reform, the 2020 election. All merely coincidence? I hardly think so. Folks, it's called Call Kabuki Theater. The Japanese Ka means all. Boo means dance. He means steal from the verb. Kabu means to slam or dissuade. Folks, it's all a lie. It's the Latin curve. The curve of the economy, stupid, must slow down the velocity of money. Or will hyperinflate before we're done. Stealing it all. Trump, bad. Must go. Good is bad. Bad is good. Up is down. Light is dark. It's all Kabuki Theater, folks. Prepping the masses for agenda 2030. And the new world will just say no to it all and wake up before it's too late.
So, folks, if you haven't asked this question, I'll ask it for you. Why all this insanity all of a sudden? Why the child trafficking? And why these lethal bioweapons, falsely labeled vaccines? Why all of this international threat of wars and rumors of wars? Why the cluster bombs being sent by the Biden regime over to Ukraine? Why all this talk about central bank digital currency? Why? Well, plain and simple, the power elite hate you and me. In fact, they have a demonic contempt for the masses, which they refer to as the goyim. Their words, not mine, folks. Useless eaters. Now, if you don't believe me, I stumbled on this five-minute poem, which was written from the globalist perspective, and it says it all about how the people are nothing but peasants and useless eaters to the global elite. You know, the cream of the crop, the 13 blue blood families, which you're going to hear in this. So let's take a listen. And I pray that this sparks a fire inside all of us. Now, by the way, this clip you're going to hear is 10 years old, but it's proving to be very, very true. So let's have a listen to this stranger than fiction reality. And that's all this was when this was written, or was it?
Hello. My name is Montague William III. And what I will tell you may well sound absurd, but the less who believe it, the better for me. For you see, I'm in banking and big industry. For many a year, we have controlled your lives, while you all just struggle and suffer in strife. We created the things that you don't really need, your sports cars and fashions and plasma TVs. I remember it clearly how all this began. Family secrets from father to son. Inherited knowledge that gives me the edge while you people lie sleeping at night in your beds. We control the money that controls your lives. Whilst you worship false idols and wouldn't think twice about selling your souls for a place in the sun. These things that won't matter when your time is done. But as long as they're there to control the masses, I just sit back and consider my assets, safe in the knowledge that I have it all, while you common people are losing your jobs. You see, I just hold you in utter contempt. But the smile on my face, well, it makes me exempt, for I have the weapon of global TV. Which gives us connection and invites empathy. You would really believe that we look out for you, while we bankers and brokers are only a few. But if you saw that, you'd take back the power. Hence, daily terrors to make you all cower, the panics, the crashes, the wars, and the illness that keep you from finding your spiritual wholeness. We rig the game, and we buy out both sides to keep you enslaved in your pitiful lives. So, go out and work as your body clock fades. And when it's all over, a few years from the grave, you'll look back on all this, and just then you'll see that your life was nothing, a mere fantasy. There are very few things that we don't now control. To have lawyers and police force was always a goal, doing our bidding while you march on the street. But they never realize that they're only just sheep. For real power resides in the hands of a few. You voted for parties. What more could you do? But what you don't know is they're one and the same. Old Gordon has passed, but old David the reins. And you'll follow the leader who was put there by you. But your blood, it runs red, while our blood runs blue. But you simply don't see it's all part of the game. Another distraction, like money and fame. Get ready for wars in the name of the free. Vaccinations for illness that will never be. The assault on your children's impressionable minds and a microchipped world. You'll put up no fight. Information suppression will keep you in tow. Depopulation of peasants was always our goal. But eugenics was not what we hoped it would be. Oh, yeah. It was us that funded Nazis. But as long as we own all the media, too, what's really happening does not concern you. So just go on watching your plasma TV, and the world will be run by the ones you can't see.
So what do you say about that? That just about sums it all up in my eyes, folks. And I believe that's why we are witnessing all the problems we see, you know, from the scamdemic to the economic crisis to the inability to find people to do a day's work for a fair day's pay. It's affecting industries all across the country to these crazy things we see in our streets now under the flag of pride to all of this corruption in Washington, from the blind eye to all of the Biden regime scandals, to these politicized attacks on the former president. To look what just happened to RFK Jr. on the Hill. He's there for a censorship hearing, and his own party censors him because they don't agree with his narrative, his conversation, whatever you want to call it, that the COVID jabs are deadly. You know, this next story we've talked about in great detail here on SDG, this concept of predictive programming, the revelation of the method. And in this next story, it is a classic example of predictive programming. This is the trailer to what I think is going to be a really great movie titled The Creator. Now, this is like, it couldn't be more timely if you ask me. Each passing day, this becomes more timely. And this comes from the director of Rogue One. I don't know if you saw that sci-fi flick. His name's Gareth Edwards. And I'll tell you, he's coming back with his next one, The Creator, with a vengeance. Sci-fi adventure. There's a main character in there. His name's John David Washington. And he takes on an AI army in this post-apocalyptic world. So, you know, it's happening right now. You know, artificial intelligence is becoming an ever-looming threat. And somebody, I forget who it was, some big name, I don't know if it was Elon Musk, one of the big names out there right now in everybody's face, said that AI is more dangerous, AI and robotics, I should add, are more dangerous than nuclear war. So this film comes at a perfect time to further stoke the populace's fears, and that's the method of the enemy, folks. So let's have a listen to this new trailer for the film that's going to be released, I think, in September. Trailer was just released. It's a glimpse into a very bleak future where we're going to be pitted against machine. So it'll be man against machine. Oh, it's set to be released on September 21st. So let's have a listen to the trailer for this rather chilling movie, The Creator.
When the war started, they protected me. Took better care of me than humans would have.
They're not people, Maya. It's just programming.
10 years ago today, the artificial intelligence created to protect us detonated a nuclear warhead in Los Angeles. This is a fight for our very existence.
Sergeant Taylor, we are this close to winning the war. But the AI are developing a super weapon. We're too treated. Or they went.
Come back to you.
Did you locate the weapon?
Yeah, it's just the kit.
Are you going to heaven?
No. You gotta be a good person to go to heaven.
So, we're the same. We can't go to heaven because you're not good. And I'm not a person.
Do you have any idea what the thing is?
She looks like a little girl now, but she's growing. Whoever has that kid wins the war.
What kind do you want, huh?
What do you want, sweetie?
For robots to be free.
Oh, we don't have that in the fridge. How about ice cream?
I'm telling you, folks, that film has great production value. That is a great film. So I suggest that you watch the YouTube trailer. You know, it made me, when I was watching it, and you have to watch it to actually understand what I'm going to say next, but it reminded me of Blade Runner meeting District 9 and Star Wars, yet still being its own original creation. It kind of just all fit together. It's truly amazing when you look at this movie. And I'm actually anxious to watch it if we're still here. However, you have to recognize it for what it is. Too comfortable in it, folks, because this is predictive programming, revelation of the method. And this has been going on for ages, generations, folks. You know, this fits perfectly with season 4, episode 5 in the Black Mirror series. And this goes back to, I think it was like 2012, 2013. It was filmed in black and white, and it's the story of this main character named Bella who goes to this warehouse with two of her friends, and this robotic dog kills one of her friends and chases the other as they drive away in separate cars. And then the dog jumps onto the other guy's car and kills him and continues to pursue Bella. And it's just a story about how this AI dog is basically invincible, unstoppable. Now, these dogs were inspired by a real technology from Boston Dynamics. This is an American engineering and robotic design company. It was founded way back in 1992. So we have all seen Elon Musk's robot that has to be tethered, that can like take three steps. We talked about that when we revealed the whole connection that Elon Musk has to the world of fiction through Tony Stark. You remember all that, folks? But there are much more advanced robotic technologies out there. Now, you couple them with artificial intelligence, and you have the creatures of the Terminator. You have the creatures of this Creator movie. You essentially have those bots that we all saw in Star Wars so many years ago. Now, this Boston Dynamics was a spinoff of an MIT company. And I think right now it's owned at least in part by Hyundai, you know, the car maker. And this is just insane what these animals can do. They have several of them. They have Big Dog, they have Spot, they have Atlas, and they have Handle. And I don't recall which one inspired this. Spot's actually commercially available. You can get it. It's like a little dog that you can have it get a beverage out of the refrigerator for you or whatever. But this other one, and I think it's Big Dog this was inspired by. I don't have it in my notes here. But these animals, I mean, these robots mimicking animals are almost unstoppable. And there's also an article that was out this week on self-healing metals. This is exactly what we saw in the last installment of the Terminator series. So you have to ask yourself, Is the reality mirroring fiction, or is fiction mirroring the reality? And speaking of the media and mind control, there's this article out in Substack right now by Tom Siebert, and he's titled it Mockingbird Media Deluxe. Watch Kara Swisher sit and spin. Check that out, folks. Now, during wartime, she was a great reporter. I think it was during Gulf War II, but don't quote me on that. So Kara Swisher has all these insightful things to say on CBS's Face the Nation last Sunday morning before the next character we're going to cover in the next segment. But I want to set the stage. So in this interview, she admitted that she had interviewed the next speaker we're going to hear, Barry Diller, and more on him later, like I said. And Diller told her in an interview back in, I think it was 2019, and get this, folks, Hollywood is now irrelevant.
Are you serious?
That's right, Paul. Operation Mockingbird's complete. The rape of the minds of we the people has been accomplished. People don't know what's real and what's fake anymore. That's all part of this revelation of method, predictive programming, Operation Mockingbird. And one of the former CIA directors said that when people no longer know what's real and what's fiction, we will have accomplished our goal. Carl Bernstein, all the way back in 1977, said this to say about the CIA. The CIA's use of the American news media has been much more extensive than agency officials have acknowledged publicly or in closed sessions with members of Congress. And Van Morrison, the singer, had this line in his song, They Own the Media. They tell us that ignorance is bliss. I guess by those who control the media, it is. They own the media. Control the stories we're told. If you ever try to go against them, you will be ignored. So this Kara Swisher, let me ask you a question. Do you think she's a real journalist, folks? Well, probably not. Think about it. She was on CBS last Sunday. After all, you've got to have some sort of connection to the deep state, the power elite, to even get there. And she still has to have some sort of value to have them put her on there. So I guess when it comes to Ms. Swisher, you just have to read her tea leaves that day to figure out whether she's telling you the truth or not. And I think that all depends on whether or not it serves the team she happens to be playing on right then. Maybe she's lying for the team that she serves, or the agency, or the hidden hand. Remember, we're all in this together, not. So if you watch this Face the Nation interview, you're going to notice that Ms. Swisher uses this term narrative a lot. And I've been using it too. I've been catching myself. She's using that instead of the term facts or truth. And I think it's very apt and adequate. In fact, she's used this term so much, this term, the narrative, and it's been such a big deal in all of her podcasts lately. I think her podcast is called The Quote, The Point, that she's actually earned a spot on A to Z Quotes page. And here's the quote that they put her up for. Everything is a narrative in life. I learned that early on as a reporter at the Washington Post. Folks, I'm telling you, Ms. Swisher is an agency gal. And speaking of supposed truth warriors who may actually be working for the other side, I promise you that I'd look into Mike Adams. And I did. And I found two articles. The first one was titled The Legend of Mike Adams and the Reality. And it's over on HealthWise, spelled W-Y-Z-E report. So go over to healthwise.org and search for the Mike Adams story. And you'll see some interesting things there. And then the other story was from a page titled ini-world-report.org, The Two Sides of the Health Ranger. And I'm going to leave it at that, folks, because we have much bigger fish to fry. But I often wonder how Mike can just be so, you know, untouchable. Yeah, he gets deplatformed by Twitter. But how come he's not getting suppressed? Oh, he built his own platform. That's what it is, Mike. Okay, I understand. Then when I was doing some research on Mike Adams, I found this one little political cartoon. It's got a dad and a boy, and the boy says, "Why are they chasing Mike, Dad?" And then there's this spotlight up into the sky with Ranger in it. Mike, you know, the Health Ranger. And it says, because he can take it, because he's not a hero. He's a silent guardian, a watchful protector. And I think that's a good term for them, watchful protectors. So they leak out information, they lull you to sleep, and then the trap can be set shut. I don't know. That's what I think. But in this next clip here, folks, actually, where am I at? I lost my track. I was rambling so far. So anyways, we have to keep moving. And right time, right now, it's time for our money episode called Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick, follow the Yellow Brick, follow the Yellow Brick Road. You're up to see the river, the wonderful river above. You find the end of the river, the wind, the river, the wind, the light. If ever, ever a winner wants to win in a band, he's won because of the wonderful thing he does. You're off to see the wizard, the wonderful wizard of Oz.
And just remember, folks, for the love of money is the root of all evil. And we're going to learn that that applies even in this next clip. So in this next clip, we have media mogul Barry Diller. And if you don't know who Barry is, he's listed on Forbes billionaire list as the 748th wealthiest man in the world on the 2023 billionaire list. He founded the internet and media conglomerate IAC back in 1995, and he remains online or on board as the senior executive and chairman. He's going to be doing this next interview on Face the Nation this last Sunday. And he's speaking to millionaire movie executives and all the millionaire movie stars out there. And he's talking to them about taking pay cuts. So let's just have a listen to this. And then I have a few thoughts on the other side. Okay.
The gears of America's entertainment industry ground to a near complete halt last week when the union that represents actors, SAG-AFTRA, joined writers on the picket line. A disclosure, some CBS News staff are SAG-AFTRA members but work under a different contract than the actors and are not affected by this strike. But to understand who is impacted here, we are joined by Barry Diller, a former movie studio head who's currently the chairman of IAC and Expedia. Welcome back to Face the Nation.
Thank you.
You know, we were trying to gauge the economic impact of this, and according to the Milken Institute, it could cause $4 billion in economic damage. What do you think the impact will be, and how long will these strikes last?
Well, the problem with this, you know, look, all strikes get settled. The issue for this one is when, because you have almost a perfect storm here, which is you had COVID, which sent people home to watch streaming and television and killed theaters. You've had the results of huge investments in streaming, which have produced all these losses for all these companies who are now kind of retrenching. So at this moment, this kind of perfect storm, it's okay if it gets settled in the next month, but I'll posit what happens if it doesn't. And there doesn't seem to be enough trust and energy to get it settled soon. What will happen is, if in fact it doesn't get settled until Christmas or so, then next year, there's not going to be many programs for anybody to watch. So you're going to see subscriptions get pulled, which is going to reduce the revenue of all these movie companies, television companies, the result of which is that there will be no programs. And at just the time strike is settled, that you want to gear back up, there won't be enough money. So this actually will have devastating effects if it is not settled soon. And the problem with settlement in this case is there's no trust between the parties. There are existential issues, obviously AI, which I think is just overhyped to death. in terms of the worries that actors and writers are going to be replaced rather than assisted, which is what I think will happen. So, but there's no trust. You have the actors union saying, how dare these 10 people who run these companies earn all this money,
right,
and won't pay us. While if you look at it on the other side, the top 10 actors get paid more than the top 10 executives. I'm not saying either is right. Actually,
yeah,
everybody's probably overpaid at the top end. The one idea I had is to say, as a good faith measure, both the executives and the most paid actors should take a 25% pay cut to try and narrow the difference between those who get highly paid and those that don't.
Well,
but
I want to talk about what you just said go ahead.
The only other thing I would do, I would call for a September 1st deadline.
Yeah.
You know, there's a strike deadline. I think there should be a settlement deadline. Because unless it happens by September 1st, the actions, and, you know, of course, who cares about Hollywood? Who cares about it? But the truth is, this is a huge business, both domestically,
exactly,
and for world export. And if these conditions,
yeah,
crying to the skies, but these conditions will potentially produce an absolute collapse of an entire industry.
Oh.
Mika, was that you? What, Mika? Does that really upset you that Hollywood could collapse? Mika, what do you have to say about the whole thing that we just heard billionaire Barry Diller propose? So Barry must have left you and your sidekick Joe speechless, eh? Well, let's talk about the $4 billion economic impact. Let's talk about it for a moment. You know, that's what's known as tertiary wealth. Now, no one ever talks anymore about primary and secondary wealth. That's, you know, when you take the wealth of the land, the timber, the coal, the gas, the oil, the crops, whatever, the minerals, and then you apply it to the labor. You create secondary wealth, concrete products, building products, food, lumber. And then that can generate tertiary wealth, which is then enabling, and tertiary wealth is currency. It's not even money. And in that primary and secondary, you also have real money, which is gold, silver, platinum. And some people argue cryptocurrencies, but I really don't see it. I see them as a bridge between currencies, which are going to be displaced here very soon by the central bank digital currency, and primary and secondary wealth. So the point here is, folks, nobody's talking about how you have to take substance, capital from the wealth of the land and apply it to labor to create true wealth in any economy. Everybody talks about the sports industry, the service industry, the entertainment industry, and how it's going to have this huge economic impact. Those are just shifting of this tertiary wealth, and that is a sure way to kill a country. And Barry knows that, folks. Bottom line, he's just so totally ironic. Here you have a billionaire preaching to the millionaires of the entertainment industry on what they should do. You know, Hollywood went woke, and now they're going broke. And I have this question for you, Barry. Are you willing to take a 25% pay reduction so that your employees can make a better living? Now, those that are coming on late to the party, you have to understand that this is all engineered, and everything we talk about on here is related, and it's all setting the stage for the Great Reset, the seeding of the Antichrist himself. But we have to keep moving, and right now it's time for our Outer Limits episode or segment to this episode.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
Now, this next clip I took from an article that was released by the Daily Mail titled, Portland surgeon dubbed Dr. Frankenstein reveals drawbacks of his genital ops on trans adolescents. So let me set the backstage or the picture on this. So just picture this. This is a clip from an LGBTQ vlog. It was hosted by an LGBTQ mental health, and I'm going to use this very loosely, professional, speaking to a, and I'm using this very loosely, medical professional, about gender-affirming surgeries. You can't make this stuff up, folks. So let's have a listen to this craziness that if you played something like this 10 years ago, people would think it was some kind of parody, and that's why it was why I put it in the outer limits. But let's listen to this next clip of this Portland queer surgeon revealing the risks of genital operations on trans adolescents, and then I have a few comments on the other side.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I really, really appreciate it. Let's start with introductions. Could you please tell us your name and your pronouns?
Yeah, perfect. My name's Blair Peters. I use he and they pronouns, and I am a gender-affirming surgeon located in Portland, Oregon at OHSU or Oregon Health Science University.
Very cool. Could you tell us a little bit about if you have a subspecialty, what it is, or maybe some examples of the most common procedures that you perform?
Yeah, definitely. So 80% or so of my practice is gender-affirming surgery. So I do facial, chest surgery, and genital surgery. But the majority of my practice and sort of where my passion lies is really genital surgery cases. So I do a lot of vaginoplasty and a lot of phalloplasty.
That is amazing. When we spoke before, you mentioned these quote-unquote non-binary procedures that you're seeing become a little more routine. Could you expand on how that might differ from what folks who have a little bit of context about gender-affirming surgery, how that might be different?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I hope the field is changing. In a lot of ways, I think everyone grows up with, and especially in medical training, really internalizes this binary bias. And that really paints a lot of what the traditional procedures offered to people are. It's like on one end, you have a vaginoplasty, and on the other end, you have a phalloplasty. And every surgery has an inherent level of risk to it. And everyone's dysphoria comes from completely different places, especially in regards to their anatomy. So my whole approach to gender-affirming surgery is not putting my own bias of what a binary genitalia should be onto someone. It's listening to them and figuring out where is your dysphoria coming from, what can we fix with surgery, and what is the appropriate level of risk for you. And there's some people that come in and they embrace a non-binary gender identity and they envision more of a non-binary type of appearance to their genitalia, whereas other people just come in, maybe transgender woman or transgender man, and they, you know, transgender man wants a phalloplasty, for example, but doesn't want a risk of urethral complications, so decides to do everything except urethral lengthening. So there's a lot more of like a spectrum of procedures now that are available, and a lot of them kind of falling maybe between the two or outside of the two. So I think it's becoming more of a field where it's less about reinforcing this binary view of genitalia and anatomy and more so embracing the person's own unique concept of themselves. And me as a surgeon, my whole goal is helping you self-actualize how you see yourself internally.
I really love that. I like the collaborative decision-making as opposed to like, this is what we're doing and that's all you have to choose from. And I heard you mention a spectrum of operation procedures that choices folks have. So for folks who might be listening and don't really have some examples. So we know that there's like phalloplasty and vaginoplasty, but could you give an example of some of the different ways someone might have a non-binary GAS?
Yeah, definitely. So the easiest example would be in terms of chest surgery. So the kind of classic, more non-binary type of surgery would be a mastectomy without having any nipple grafts, for example. And that's just one variation of different types of chest surgery. Some people are going for procedures where it's a mastectomy, but you're not totally flat. So you're somewhere between having a breast mound and not having a breast mound. And that's what sort of works for individuals, because sometimes you're flat enough that you can bind and appear flat, but then also if you're feeling more feminine one day and want to have the appearance of a breast, then you have an appearance of a breast. As far as it relates to genital surgery, I'd say the greatest variation is in terms of what we can do with phalloplasty. So some individuals will go for the full kind of traditional phalloplasty, whereas others may choose a shaft-only phalloplasty. So that basically means that we create a phallus, but we don't touch or lengthen the urethra. So you don't have any risk of strictures or fistulas. But within a shaft-only phalloplasty, there's a lot of different things you can do with the other genitalia. So some people will choose to leave everything else otherwise unaltered. Some people will choose to still have a scrotoplasty and have the clitoral tissue buried, but leave their vaginal canal. And talking to some of those individuals, it's sometimes a desire for future childbearing or enjoying penetrative intercourse with the vaginal canal or just not having dysphoria from the vaginal canal and not wanting the risk of the vaginectomy. And then others will sometimes do what we call perineal masculinization, where they'll do everything except for urethral lengthening. So then basically we'll do a phallus, a scrotum, a vaginectomy, bury the clitoral tissue, and then ultimately the individual will sit to urinate through urostomy.
That's really fascinating. I have to be honest, I didn't even conceptualize that there would be options for surgeries like that or different variations until I had a patient of mine tell me that they were considering getting genital gender-affirming surgery, but they didn't want all of the high maintenance aftercare of a traditional vaginoplasty and having maybe some penile preservation. And it honestly just blew my mind when I knew that was a thing. And so it's really interesting to get your perspective of someone who actually provides that care.
Gosh.
Sorry, folks, my mic was off. Yeah, gosh golly, Gomer. Really fascinating? Hardly. So remember what we have here. We have these two double-minded individuals who the Bible tells us are unstable in all their ways, advocating gender-affirming surgery after admitting there's lifelong health care, which they referred to as maintenance issues, after a vagioplasty. So they failed to mention that 3 out of 10 people who have these vagioplasties, or, you know, the bonus hole or whatever you want to call it, are now, and I'm sorry for being so graphic, folks, and if you don't want to hear this, cover your ears, but what happens with 3 out of 10 people who have this sick procedure, they literally end up defecating out of their new bonus hole. And I'm sorry it may sound graphic, but that is what's reported in the medical journals. But he referred to it as fistulas. That's what they call it. And I do apologize for being so graphic, but this, folks, is wrong. And it's what happens when you let the double-minded lead, when you let the double-minded counsel, when you turn a blind eye to mental illness and call it an alternative lifestyle. It's wrong, folks. But I'm telling you, praise the Lord, there is hope. And right now it's time for our Hopium Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hopium Report, where dreamers of all sorts come for their faith snort. Prepare to get high on Hopium.
So we have all of this insanity going on in our culture right now. We have these people, these quote-unquote professionals, advocating for gender-affirming surgery. And you think, wow, all hope is lost. And then comes along a story like this next one. So it's in the Hopium Report. Former LGBT activist renounces her job of grooming children and asks herself, what have I contributed to? This was from the LifeSite news site, and there's a lot of good info over there, folks. So if you haven't heard it or known of it, go out and check out LifeSite news. So this was from an interview that Kay Yang did on Fox News, And she said, I started to realize that what I had been doing at my job at the LGBT Center was grooming. I had to really face myself and what I've done. So let's listen to Kay Yang tell us about it in her own words.
My name is Kay Yang. I'm a former trans rights activist. I also worked at an LGBT center back in 2011. It was a small local nonprofit, and I was hired to conduct LGBT community outreach and education. And I had no idea that what I was doing at the time, I was being used as a Trojan horse for this like huge marketing campaign that I didn't know was going on, that was normalizing these policies and these practices that are pushing irreversible medical damage on healthy children. You know, these double mastectomies and so-called genital reconstruction surgeries, these are being done on children. And now the sex-based rights of women and girls are also being undermined, instead of the focus being on same-sex attraction and rights for same-sex people. It was becoming more and more about gender identity and, pushing sexuality. And I started to realize that what I had been doing at my job at the LGBT center, it was grooming. So when I entered into that job, the environment was just completely different than it is now. Back then, no one knew anything about the language of transgender or gender identity ideology. I was being molded myself, because prior to starting to work there, I didn't really know anything about trans, and I had never really heard or understood the concept of gender identity. So through working there, I became indoctrinated, and right away I was labeled as an expert. Even other women that I worked with at the LGBT center, I recall times when we sat there and said, do you understand this? Does this make sense to you? And then we would laugh about it and be like, well, gotta do our job, you know? And it's just very interesting how that has progressed to what we see today. Where 10 years ago, no one knew this language, now the language is everywhere. You can't escape it. People who don't actually understand the depth of all of this are repeating it back to me, trying to shut me down from talking about this. I feel like I was exploited. I feel like I was taken advantage of. I feel like my good intentions, my youthfulness, the position that I had in my home community, all of that was utilized to push this ideology on my local community. And it just felt very exploitative. And when I came to realize what we were doing, it was only after the fact, it was years after the fact, actually, that I looked back and thought, oh my God, what have I done? What have I contributed to? I actually felt devastated. It was very difficult to process and deal with. I had to really face myself and what I had done and really have a reckoning with myself. So it didn't feel good, but I do feel like it's very important that I've had these experiences and seen all of this from the inside out, because now I can tell the truth about what was going on, what I witnessed. I want people to understand that this isn't an issue that is just for, quote, right-wing people. This is an issue for everyone. All people need to be concerned about what's going on, because this affects children and it affects the sex-based rights of women and affects everyone on planet Earth. And when I say it's an agenda, part of what I mean is just look at the way that the idea and the concept of trans kids has become completely proliferated throughout society. And when I was working at the LGBT center starting back in 2011, we didn't have any trans kids. It wasn't a thing that I even knew or understood. It was more focused on like teenagers and young adults. And why is this being done? Because there's a huge agenda about money behind this. These numbers, it's being attributed to, oh, well, the number is so high because children weren't safe to come out before, and we have better data collection now, but that's not why. In reality, these very high numbers are indicative of a widespread social engineering and indoctrination campaign. And the global market for sex reassignment is supposed to surpass $1.5 billion in 2026. Really concerned that our children are being told complete untruths about themselves and their bodies and the world around them, and that's setting them up for danger. And it's setting them up to internalize feelings of shame against their own body just for being a male or being a female. And I really think that all people, but especially children, should be taught to love and respect their body and grow to accept the body that they were born in, and whether that's a male or a female. And I'm very concerned that this ideology is grooming young girls to believe that they don't need sex-based rights anymore, and grooming them to promote this ideology, because that's what happened to me. I think women who are incarcerated are some of the most invisibilized and vulnerable women there could possibly be. They have no rights. No one is looking out for them. They are completely subject to whoever came to work that day, right? So if these women are like a canary in the coal mine, what's happening to them is going to start happening more and more to women who aren't incarcerated. I think it's very important that we keep our eyes on what's happening to women in prisons, because it's just terrifying to think that, say you did something and find yourself incarcerated with a man. And what's happening now is increasingly women's free speech is becoming under attack, not just people screaming at us, telling us to shut up, but actually losing jobs, losing positions and scholarships. And women are being, women have had their bank accounts shut down. Women have had their fundraising online shut down. My fundraising online has been shut down for my own work. So if we are being criminalized for speaking freely, how long does it take before women are being arrested for saying that a man is a man and a woman is a woman? Are we going to be arrested just for saying I'm not a man, incarcerated, and then forced to share a cell with a male rapist? That's terrifying, and every woman in the world should be concerned about that possibility.
Thank you, Miss Yang. God bless you, Kay. You have an opportunity for redemption here. You know, there is an agenda, as you called it. It's the Marxist agenda for total control. It's a methodology of the fifth generation warfare technique. This Marxist methodology, okay? And remember that quote I read last week, this Marxist ideology from that Russian brainwashing summary? The final conclusion to the book, if they can win this war without firing a shot, they have been very effective. And then how about that body shame comment that she made? So, you know, people are being body shamed. They're being made to feel uncomfortable in their male body if they have some gender dysphoria as they grow up. So that's body shaming, folks. That's really what it is. But isn't it ironic that we will promote, or the establishment promotes gender-affirming surgeries for people who have been body-shamed, yet we can't talk to a clinically obese person and encourage them to adopt a healthy lifestyle so that they can have a better quality of life, because that's body-shaming. Do you see the hypocrisy here? You know, I was thinking about Kay, and it would be great if she could become the Abby Johnson of the LGBT movement. I wonder if LifeSite could get the two of those together, and maybe Abby Johnson could help mentor Kay. Now, if you don't remember Abby Johnson, she was the American pro-life, or is the American pro-life activist, that previously worked for Planned Parenthood as a clinic director. And then back in October 2009, she resigned after watching an abortion happen live on ultrasound. So just like Abby, Kay's shown tremendous integrity and a backbone to spoke out about the atrocity of an abortion, especially a late term Any's an atrocity, but the late term are actually brutal, brutal procedures, folks. It's a murder of the unborn. And Kay has shown that same integrity in terms of the disfiguring and the destruction of all of these young, gender-confused boys and girls. But she's going to face the wrath of her former comrades. And the reason why they act with such fury is because deep down inside, they're not very confident. They don't have a moral rectitude about this position they declare as being so gender-affirming and so right. So instead of an inner peace, they have this angst, this inner disturbance, because what they're doing flies in the face of reality and truth. It creates an insecurity, so to speak, and it makes them very prone to lashing out at anyone and everyone who may pull their cover, so to speak. I don't know if I'm saying this well, but it's kind of the way that somebody who's been deceived reacts when they first see truth. They lash out. Deep down inside, they know it's true. You know, sometimes before they lash out, they'll laugh at it. And then if you continue to be exposed to the truth, ultimately you just have to surrender and accept it, or you go crazy. And that's what lies at the rotten heart of all these accusations of hate speech for this and hate speech for that. It's a defiance of the truth. It's a shaking in every fist in the face of God. I can go on this, folks, but we have to keep moving, and right now it's time for our Absurdian Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the world of the absurd, this is the Absurdium Report.
Life mimics theater, but fiction is safer. The curtain rises. The show begins.
Now, this next story goes all the way back to 2019, but it's very relevant. It's a clip from CBS Channel 13 Sacramento, and it reports on a student named Caitlin Fink, who's working in the porn industry as a high school student. So this all started when some of the journalists at the student newspaper, the Bear Creek High School paper, wanted to publish an article about a student who's working in the porn industry, and the school district tried to stop them from happening, but finally agreed after legal review. The article says that the board found the publication of this article presents no, quote-unquote, legal issues. So just have a listen to this report and think about how absurd this is. Think about this. This is a high school student, and just listen to her stinking thinking.
First student by day, adult entertainer by night. Our exclusive interview with a local high schooler working in the porn industry.
I like the positive attention I get from it.
Bear Creek High School senior Caitlin Fink is speaking out tonight after a free speech battle between student journalists and their administrators. Today, the Bear Creek Bruin Voice published an article about Fink working in the porn industry. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Adrienne Moore.
And I'm Tony Lopez. The district tried to stop the article from coming out, but ultimately gave in. Anna Giles has the interview you'll only see on CBS 13 with a student now making a career in adult entertainment.
The article so many people have been waiting to read is finally out. The star of the story, Caitlin Fink, is glad people will finally know she's more than her job.
Adult entertainers, they aren't just objects. They're actual people. They have feelings. They have goals. They have motivation.
Caitlin Fink left home for good last New Year's Eve. Now she pays her own rent, utilities, and phone bill. She discovered the porn industry could help, once making hundreds of dollars within a few hours.
When people found out that I was doing that, they assumed all these things about me, and I was like, oh, no, that's not true.
That's why she agreed to do an interview with her school paper, the Bruin Voice. Once the district got wind of that, they demanded to preview the article. When the student newspaper refused, a battle started, including threats of job loss
and shutting the article down.
I feel like the district sees it as a taboo thing that should be pushed underneath the rug, and it's really not a taboo topic. It's just a topic that people don't like to talk about because it makes them uncomfortable.
District leaders released a statement today saying, quote, they are pleased with the process they have been engaged in regarding the Bear Creek High School newspaper has resulted in an article that meets legal requirements. Fink has no plans to slow down and hopes to become a model. She says working in porn allows her to enjoy compliments about her looks.
Even though I know what their poor intentions are, it's still nice to know that they think that about me because I don't believe it sometimes.
The teacher who has run the Bruin Voice for decades is still unsure about the possible punishment she could face. Coming up at 6, we're going to have much more on how she's handling that.
Oh, wow, did you hear that, folks? How far we've fallen. This young lady is still a girl who's incredibly naive. You know, she referred to it as, I like the positive attention I get from it. Well, it's certainly attention. And she did even admit that maybe their intentions aren't right, but it helps her with her body image. She's not comfortable with herself. And this is a normal process that young people go through, and it's being used to prey upon them. So it's certainly attention, perverted attention, yes. Call it pornographic attention, absolutely. But it is certainly not positive attention. And what's really incredible about this, folks, is just yesterday, Terry cues up a movie for us. It's off of Paramount. It's called Red Statue or something like that. And it's a movie about a young girl, a senior, who is seduced by this ex-porn star to get into the quote-unquote industry. This is grooming, folks. And did you hear when she said, it's not a taboo subject? It's a topic that people don't like to talk about because it makes them uncomfortable. Well, stop and think about it for a minute. Isn't that literally the definition of a taboo topic? Well, it was at least when I checked it out. So it's so very sad to see a young, beautiful girl speak about an industry who cares nothing about her or her future, folks. Once she's used and abused, and though ironically that she feels like she's an adult with free choice and taking care of all of her bills, paying her rent and her food, by those who are going to make orders of magnitude more money off of this mere pittance that she gets, she doesn't realize that she's going to be spit out after she's chewed up and passed her sell-by date, so to speak. You know, the industry or the career, if you want to call it that, in this very perverted industry, as they refer to it, is very short for most of these victims. You know, the very things she claims it helps her with, it's actually worsening the situation with. Jesus Christ is the solution here. And I pray that she sees the path forward and takes a turn from it to him. So if you can join me in prayer for that, folks, it would be great. But we have to keep moving, and right now, it's time for Ken's Corner, spelled with a K.
Welcome to Ken's Corner, spelled with a K, where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started.
So this Richard Knight now takes the stage as the next guy in line, I should say, with a few others who are literally thinking the very same things I'm thinking at about the same times I am. You know, I've told you in the past that this has happened countless times now with J.D. Rucker, a few times with Mike Adams, and a few others in the alternative media. But this week, I shared that moment with Richard Knight as I was thinking about what to share with you from my past. Now, in the past, I shared some thoughts on here about word magic. But today, I was thinking about the Delphi method and how I could tie it into this woke agenda in a broad sense and in a more focused sense, the trans element of the LGBTQ agenda, this narrative, so to speak, as Ms. Swisher would call it. So more specifically, how I can show that the lying mockingbird media is actually using the Delphi method to build consensus That was what I wanted to talk about. And then just going through my news feeds, I stumble on the latest article by Richard Knight, and it's titled, and get this, folks, How the Media Spread Transgender Ideology by Richard Knight. So he opens up and he says this, and this blew my mind because this is exactly what I wanted to talk about. He says, the idea that the media exists to impart information might hold good when the news is something that no one is in a position to deny. You know, cases like reckless driver arrested or the body of the fourth victim pulled from the lake. Those are just facts. But the more questionable messages that they give, and they're very subtly conveyed, are when they patently deny the middle road in some of their reporting. So what they're doing is they're conveying in a very subtle way an agenda, which is the purpose of the program that you may be watching. So in short, when the media is on a mission for what I'll call outright deception, their modus operandi is very covert. And that's what the CIA coached them with a lot. And now with this mindset, I'd like to talk about a few of the techniques they use to spread this transgender ideology. And this is what was in Knight's article, but it's exactly what I was going to share with you. Call that strange, folks. Call that whatever. But I think it means that we've actually got a consensus out there in terms of critical thinkers. So the most obvious technique is to give this narrative, whatever it may be, and in this case, this whole trans movement exposure. So let's wind the clock back to 2018, and it was a segment on this one talk show out there. It was in Britain, and the segment was answering a question, or I should say asking a question and attempting to answer it. And the question was, does gender self-identification put women at risk? And that was what the whistleblower out of the movement just said it does. So there were a series of them over in Great Britain. Piers Morgan weighed in on it, on a segment he did called Girl Guide Transgender Row. And there was another one that was done on a breakfast television show. It was a clash that happened when Monroe Bergdorf clashed with Piers on a heated debate concerning gender fluidity. Now, it doesn't matter whether or not you take the pro or con side of the position in this. The point is that the ideology, the narrative, is getting out there and being seen by the masses. That's the first step. So then there's a methodology that happens, and this is where the Delphite kicks in. And it's the same way the serpent beguiled Eve in the garden over in Genesis 3. They were talking about good things. Think about it. Being more like God. What can be wrong with that? Same thing here. You know, you want to give these people a positive environment to express themselves in. What could be wrong with that? So wind the clock back another year to this other show where presenter Nikki Campbell, this British reporter, this guy who's talking to this strange-looking girl named Emma, and he asks this question. He opens this way in this 2017 television segment, and there's a YouTube video out there on it, very worth watching. So he goes, you're neither male nor female, right? So right away, he affirms the position. That's not unbiased reporting, folks. And she replies, it's true. I identify as non-binary, which means I'm neither male nor female. And corresponding to that, I use the they, them pronouns. Nikki makes no comment there. Like, how can you be they and them? You're one person. No, he doesn't do that. He fails to point out that calling yourself something you aren't doesn't mean that you are. That's back to the whole word magic thing. So he allows that lie to sit out there, this affront to logic. So she was wrong to say that I identify with they, them pronouns when she refers to herself, because pronouns to refer to an individual in the common understanding of the lexicon are I, me. So right there was a flaw. Yet she was allowed to continue in this false premise. And we talked about that in the last Richard Knight article. So when you don't hear this challenged by a journalist, it becomes almost accepted. So her using plural pronouns was a fairly sneaky thing to do. And by letting these things pass, the host, Nikki Campbell, conveyed the idea that transgenders we're in a special group of people, protected individuals. So this sort of statement is exempt from an appeal to logic, a rational questioning. And that's one of the key points of the Delphi method. Then Emma went on to say that because there was this huge variance in gender presentations and gender identity within humankind, and that implies that you can't say mankind, which is essentially shorthand for man and womankind. So again, instead of ridiculing her, what Nikki Campbell did instead was treat this comment as if it was worth listening to, when clearly a person's gender presentation implies nothing about their sex, at least according to these people. So Emma goes on to just spew this stinking thinking, signaling to the world that she was the most important and special person in the world, in the entire studio, and in fact, the whole world. He pretty much did exactly what his handlers wanted him to do. He promoted this narrative. He opened it up for discussion. But then I loved what the audience did. They shot back. And the comments made on this video, if you check the comment section, one commenter wrote, "Thank you to the lady who spoke out against this insanity." So one of the people, there was another one that said, "The pronoun stuff is just crap. They need to start worrying about something that deserves to be worried about." And a third said, "The fact that this is even a discussion shows how far we've fallen." That's exactly what I said, folks. So there was this one individual in the audience, Bethany Brown, who said that this is stupid. And let me see if I have her quote there. No, I didn't. Oh, yeah, here it is. So what about people who are non-binary? What about people who are gender fluid? And what this does, this was a question that Nikki Campbell asked. And this woman came back and said, "The fact that this is even a that was Bethany Brown who said that. "The fact that this is even a discussion shows how far we've fallen." So this is one of the people in the audience. So instead of the host taking her position for a while, which is what you would do if you were fair and balanced in your reporting, he used the Delphi method to try to move it. Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. So you move the rock more towards the absurdity. And that's exactly what happened. I'm telling you, folks, this transgender propaganda, the narrative, as the Mockingbird actors like Ms. Swisher and this Nikki Campbell are doing, it's a classic astroturf, top-down method of brainwashing. You know, it reminded me of the old Orwell axiom, if you want to call it that. There is no swifter route to the corruption of thought than through the corruption of language. Once they steal your lexicon and you cannot communicate effectively and efficiently, you lose all cohesiveness as a society. And the transgender movement and its supporters are like an army of idiots. They're the whores of the elite, so to speak. They're today's Hitler's brown shirts or Mao's little red book toting youth. That's what they are, folks. Now, I want to hold off and wrap this article up next week because I'm running out of time right now. And I also want to do a deep dive into Randy Weingarten's teachers union that descended on Washington, D.C. to instruct teachers on how to brainwash children. So we've got all this craziness going on here, from this young high school girl who's confused to these people who are being body shamed because of their gender dysphoria, which is a normal part of adolescence, to this teachers union leader who's now telling their soldiers, the teachers of America, that you have to brainwash the youth in all of this ideology. Now, there has to be something behind all of this, and we're going to find out about that in our Back to the Future episode. The segment where we take something from the past and bring it back to the future. Now, on this one, folks, we could take it all the way back to that infamous murder in Genesis chapter 4 where Cain killed Abel, and this went all through the ages, through the Canaanites and the curse of the Canaanites. But we're going to just wind the clock back right now to 1950s. We're not going to go back that far, but this goes way back. So back in the 1950s, two Canadian psychiatrists, Abram Hoffer and Humphrey Osmond, noted that there was a similarity between the symptoms of schizophreniacs and the effects of this hallucinogen found in the desert plant known as peyote, and that's mescaline is the drug. And then they noticed that there was a similarity in the structure, which a lot of people in the monarch movement and the and everything that's being done to expose this child trafficking referred to as the white rabbit. This led them to search for a link between adrenochrome, which is a metabolite, an oxidative metabolite of adrenaline, to some thinking that possibly this could produce mind-altering experiences. Now, this research continued on this adrenochrome for decades. In 1973, a paper was published in the Medicinal Chemistry Journal called Progress in Medicinal Chemistry, Six Adrenochrome and Related Compounds. And in this, the researchers talked about the progress that has been made in the physiological, pharmacology, and psychopharmacological significance of these compounds, in particular adrenochrome. And then there was one in the 90s that looked at the effect of adrenochrome and epinephrine on the human heart. And their study concluded that it actually leads to hypertension. So this has been studied for a long time, and all the people out there debunking it, well, I'll hold off on that. So let's just kind of stitch this all together. Okay, so you have this this movie out there, Sound of Freedom, and you have the producer and a few of the people in it, James Cavell and some of the others, talking about adrenochrome. And then you have the mainstream media out there doing damage control on adrenochrome, saying things like, well, it can be made in the lab. Yeah, it can be made in the lab, just like a lot of compounds are. But a lot of times, the compound that's made doesn't have the right stereochemistry. It's not the right enantiomer, as it's called. There's a way that light is turned or twisted by the structure of a molecule. Sometimes it's right-hand rotation. Sometimes it's left-hand rotation. Sometimes it's a combination of them. And in the lab, you cannot create the same stereoisomer, and it even gets more crazy. There's a spiritual element to this, folks. And when you don't harvest adrenochrome from the ritualistic sacrifice of a scared-to-death child, you don't get the demonic element to it either. It's like an unconsecrated host, so to speak, in the Catholic faith with regard to communion. But anyways, there's these articles on it. And then in 1987, the Tallahassee newspaper, which was called the, I don't have the name of it here, the paper from Tallahassee, they report on these two people who were arrested in February of 1987, well-dressed individuals who had six hungry, scruffing-looking children between the age of 2 and 11 with them. So I'm going to let Greg Reese fill us in on this part of the story. So let's have a listen to Greg Reese give us an update on what happened with regard to these two individuals from this group known as the Finders back in 1987.
In 1987, Tallahassee, Florida police responded to an anonymous phone tip about six malnourished children covered in bug bites and scratches being accompanied by two well-dressed men in a public park. The two men were arrested for child abuse and suspicion of trafficking children across state lines. And so the U.S. Customs Service, the Washington Metropolitan Police Department, and the FBI all got involved. The two men arrested had multiple fake IDs and were found to be members of a group known as the Finders. The Finders owned multiple properties in the D.C. area. The investigation of these properties reportedly found evidence of child pornography and photographs of three children and three white-robed men dismembering two goats. The children described a harsh learning environment where a man known as the game caller was in charge of everyone and could talk to the adults with a computer in the van. One of the games they played was responding to local newspaper advertisements for babysitters, tutors, and anything else that could get them into a family's home where they would then gather as much information as possible about the family's habits, identity, and occupation. The Finders were labeled a satanic cult, and the media sensationalized it for a full week until the investigation was called off. It was reported that the mothers of the children were members of the Finders, and that the two men had the full consent of the parents to be transporting them. The media narrative then blamed their own sensationalism, claiming that the whole thing was blown out of proportion and that the Finders were just a harmless 1960s-style hippie community. Years later, the reports of U.S. Customs Special Agent Ramon J. Martinez began bringing attention back to the matter. Martinez claimed that evidence included the intent to traffic children, the ordering of children from Hong Kong through the Chinese embassy, the instructions on the impregnation of female members of the Finders, and a library of books on the subjects of mind control and terrorist warfare strategy. Martinez claimed that every attempt to review evidence was blocked and was finally told by a member of the Metropolitan Police Department that the Finders had come under the protection of the CIA, who claimed jurisdiction by deeming it an internal matter and had the entire case labeled secret. The leader of the Finders, Marion Petty, bragged about infiltrating the CIA. His wife, Isabel, worked for the CIA, and their son worked for the CIA-run Air America. Finder members' passports revealed travel visas to places such as North Korea, North Vietnam, and Russia, all approved by the U.S. State Department. This resurfaced evidence inspired outrage, and an investigation was launched. The Department of Justice began investigating allegations that the CIA had used a front company run by a commune to train agency employees. Their investigation resulted in a verdict of no evidence of CIA interference and no evidence of criminal activity with the Finders. During this same time period was the McMartin preschool scandal, wherein hundreds of parents reported that their children had suffered satanic sexual abuse at a preschool in Manhattan Beach, California. And for some reason, evidence seized from the Finders included a map of this same preschool. It seems to be the norm. KinderCare, the biggest preschool chain in America, was owned by Henry Kravis, who was a close associate of former CIA director George Bush. KinderCare has been accused by several parents for child abuse and satanic ritual abuse. Former Clinton Foundation official Joel Goetz operated a huge chain of kindergartens in China where several parents complained that their children were molested. Just as the CIA and their partner groups manage the media, Hollywood, and the worldwide drug trade, they also manage the human slave trade. And as bad as the symptoms are, we need to be focused on the disease if we ever want to end this. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
So how's this apply to the freaky deaky news? Well, it's all over with this Sound of Freedom, folks. And there's a couple groups doing some deep dives into this entire sick, demonic realm. And there are psychiatrists and there are psychoanalysts that have been documenting this for decades. There was a report out, I don't have the source. Obama administration handed child migrants over to human traffickers. So this was a program that a Senate report released. I'm not sure if it was recently or not, but back in the fall of 2013, tens of thousands of unaccompanied minors traveled to the U.S. through the southern border. And there's no vetting of these people, that they're hosts that are here to pick them up. It's sick, folks. And then in response to all of these claims about the adrenochrome conspiracy, Forbes magazine comes out with the counter to it, as does McGill University. They always have them. QAnon's adrenochrome quackery, the Office for Science and Society, McGill University. The adrenochrome conspiracy theory pushed by Sound of Freedom star explained. That's on Forbes. Folks, no child of God can ignore all these signs of the times. These are demonic days we're living in. The sands of time, they're running low, I'm telling you. The stage is being set. The curtains are about to be drawn back. The dynamite's in place and the fuse is lit. Say it however you want, folks, but the truth is that we are literally on the threshold of the end of an age. And the Bible teaches that a person who the devil will literally possess and incarnate, and this person is known as the beast. And last week I promised that we'd get to know our adversary, the devil, and his sidekicks, the beast and the false prophet. And this week I want to focus on the false prophet. But before we do, I want to replay the clip I played in part two last Sunday, If I Were the Devil.
If I was the devil, my first victim would be the kids. From the moment they left their mother's precious wombs and were born, I would condition them to see racial division as a norm. And I wouldn't stop till I've stripped distance, divide and conquer. It's the oldest trick in the book of Genesis. And see, as they grew up, I would continue my infiltration. For 12 years, I would steal their hearts and minds from them and call it education. If I was the devil, my next victim would be women. I'd make old, out-of-touch men control women's bodies and rights. What better way to curse God than to disrespect the very bringers of life? Speaking of God, if I was the devil when it comes to religion, I'd put my plan together perfectly. I'd allow you to worship Jesus every Sunday. And on the other 6 days, I'd make you worship me. In the form of money, fame, lust, and greed, to my religion, I wouldn't need to convert you. I turn the Ten Commandments to the Ten Suggestions and make virtue signaling more important than virtue. I give you just enough religion to hate each other, but not enough to love each other. And for my final evil strategy, I make you forget the whole purpose of religion was spirituality. If I was the devil, I wouldn't come dressed in a red cape and pointy horns. I'd drive a Lambo, have a pretty face and a Gucci belt on. Basically, I'd take the form of everything you ever wished for and watch you create your own hell. I don't need to torch the earth. And as far as politicians go, I'd change nothing. They're already doing my dirty work. If I was the devil low-key, I'd be behind the scenes. You wouldn't have to see me. I would normalize dysfunction and call it reality TV. And in this reality, I would attack your self-worth, making it hard to heal from. I'd show you images of fake bodies and make them more attractive than real ones. If I was the devil, I'd make you pray to technology and idolize those who created. I'd make clout the number one drug and steal millions of lost souls as they chased it. Now, if I was the devil, I wouldn't do it all at once. I'd take my time instead. I'd eat away at your morals little by little, exactly how cancer spreads. Speaking of cancer, if I was the devil, I'd feed you tasty food that makes you ill. Then I'd turn your doctors into drug dealers, selling you pills that keep you coming back instead of truly healed. Yeah, if I was Lucifer, then I'd know life and death are in the tongue. So I'd make your knife and fork your executioner. So you can't achieve higher consciousness if your body is sick. You won't opt for positive information if you have inflammation. If I was Satan, my cleverness would be admired. Why do you think the word inflammation literally means to set on fire? If I was the devil, I'd show you how to really flex. I would release pandemics on the world to give people the chance to really care for each other and then sit back and laugh as they exploited and became scared of each other. Basically, if I was the devil, I'd keep doing what I'm doing. God is my witness. I already control your systems. Don't try to fight against this. Because for my last trick, I would make smart people like you doubt whether I ever existed.
Wow. So there you have it. Smart people are laughing when we say this is demonic. Smart people do laugh when you say this is the sign of the time. the stage being set for the unveiling of the Antichrist. There are attacks everywhere, though, folks. Just look at it. There's attacks to our morality, attacks to self-worth through this whole gender-affirming surgery, attacks on women, as the LGBTQ whistleblower said. There's an all-out drive to confuse children in terms of who they are and what they are. There's the poisoning of the body through all of the addictive processed foods. Everything we cover on here, tell you what, this is the stage being set for the revelation of the beast of Revelation as described in Revelation chapters 13, verses 1 through 18. And I suggest you read those 18 verses, folks. Now, he goes by many aliases. He's known as the son of perdition, the man of sin, the wicked one, the Antichrist. And today, let's do what God's word teaches us to do. And let's unveil, let's disclose, let's reveal him to the world as foretold by St. John in Revelation chapter 13. So today, I want to look at three things. And to begin with, I want to look at the nature of the beast in terms of his sudden appearance. Revelation chapter 13, verse 1 says, I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his ten horns, ten crowns, and upon his heads, the name of blasphemy. Folks, that's everything we see right now. We see a proud and godless world shaking their angry fists at our high and mighty God, and that, folks, is blasphemy. So this beast, he comes suddenly, and isn't this what happened here? He rises up and emerges out of the sea. Now, the Bible clearly teaches us, folks, that what the sea stands for are the nations of the world. Revelation chapter 17, verse 15 says, he hath saith unto me, the waters which thou sawest, where the whore, that's the false church, sitteth, the people and the multitudes and the nations and the tongues and the languages. So out of the seething sea of humanity, secular humanism, the brotherhood of man, the fatherhood of God, out of this seething sea, out of the multitudes of the people, the nations and the languages, out of all of this, the boiling sea rises the Antichrist. So the beast is going to come in a time when the nations of the world are in turmoil. And don't we see that right now with what happened after the Fed and the United States government attacked the SWIFT system, saying they were going to levy sanctions upon Russia? And now we see the collapse of the monetary money system as new systems are being put in place. You know, this beast is going to be all of the Napoleons and the Hitlers and the Alexander Greats and the Stalins and the Maos all rolled into one. And that's the nature of the beast. But I also want to reveal or expose his satanic ancestry. You know, you can see his father and his family and even his family fortune from the last part of verse 2 where it says the dragon, that's his father, gave him power and his seat, that's his throne, with great authority. Now, remember, the does have it to give because we talked last week and the week before about the fact that it was legally given to him by Adam and Eve. So God originally gave the power and authority to Adam, like we talked about. Then Adam legally handed it over to Satan. And even up to today, after the cross, Satan still tries to retain that power and authority. And it's called usurped power and usurped authority. And that's exactly what Washington is doing right now. This isn't de jure, just authority that's being executed by the enemy in Washington and in the heavenly realm. No, this is usurped authority. It's de jure authority, authority by power or apparent projection of power. So there's coming this other one who will be a worshiper of Satan. In fact, Satan's going to turn over all of his usurped power and his lying signs and wonders and authority over to this one beast, this man. And Paul wrote in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 9, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders. Literally, folks, the devil's going to turn all of his power to a surrogate, the child of the devil. And then notice again in the last part of verse 2, Revelation chapter 13, verse 2, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. Now, the reason that the devil cannot use his full usurped authority today is because the Holy Spirit restrains him through each and every one of you and me who believe. That's the sudden appearance of the beast, and that's the ancestry of the beast. the sinister satanic ancestry of the beast. Now I want to wrap this up today with the seductive appeal that the beast and his ideology has on the world that is literally following him to Armageddon. In Revelation chapter 13, verses 3 and 4, it reads, "And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast as they worshiped the dragon and gave power unto the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" So his deadly wound was healed, and the world wondered after the beast. That means that they literally admired him, and they worshiped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. Now, this beast, also known as the Antichrist, is going to be a very appealing man, a charismatic man in the eyes of the spiritually blind and deaf. So when they call him the beast, don't think about this as being some hideous creature in appearance. No, the term beast speaks of his nature, folks, not his appearance. Remember, the devil himself appears as an angel of light. And likewise, this beast will be handsome, charming, clever, very intelligent. He's going to be persuasive as a speaker. He's going to be a global charmer. He's probably going to get the Nobel Peace Prize. Sort of sounds like Obama in a way, doesn't it? And one of the reasons that the entire world is going to wonder after him is that he's going to have this deadly wound on his head, and mysteriously, miraculously, the wound's going to be healed. Again, from verse 3, "And his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after him." So this is going to be Satan's demonic counterfeit to the resurrection of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Now, of course, it's going to be a resuscitation, not a resurrection, because the devil doesn't have the power to give life. But the Antichrist will appear as if he came back to life again. And maybe they're going to use AI and robotics for this. I don't know how it's going to be done for sure. But Satan will literally incarnate this being at that point. And then we're going to see he's going to come in all sorts of promises of peace and prosperity and all these good things. And the Bible says with peace, he will destroy many. And he'll be the greatest avatar of peace the world has ever known. Almost sounds like Trump in a way, doesn't it, what I'm hearing from the MAGA movement? You know, the world's finally going to say, look, our Messiah has finally come. There's peace on the earth, finally. All hell to the beast. All hell to the beast. And that's how they end up worshiping Satan. And that's what the mark of the beast is about, and that's what all this end time stuff's about. And it truly looks, from my perspective here, with spiritual eyes to see and spiritual ears to hear, that the devil's time is literally about to begin here, folks. Now, I'd like to pick up on this next week and talk about his sinister ambitions. And then maybe if we have time, get into his sidekick, the false prophet. But in the words of Winston Churchill, who had a dubious past also, folks, but these words are inspirational. Never give in, no, never. Stand on that rock of truth.
Never give in. Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in, except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
And remember, folks, if you've asked Jesus Christ into your heart, if you put your hands up and say, I forsake all, Lord, and now I trust you, and if you declare with your mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord, and you believe in your heart that he was risen from the dead on the third day, then you have that same power in you. And that same power rose Jesus from the grave. So let's lift our hands up with Jeremy Camp and realize that the battle has already been won by Jesus. I love y'all.
We're living in a very defining time in our generation, where fear is creeping in and the uncertainty of the unknown is everywhere.
I can see what is raging at my feet. I can feel the breath of those surrounding me. I can hear the sound of nations rising up. We will not be overtaken. We will not be overcome. I can walk.
There's an urgency like never before in my heart to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ, to show a world that looks like there is no hope, that in Jesus alone you will find that hope and peace, to stand up in the midst of adversity and tribulation, and to show the unconditional love of our Savior while not shying away from speaking the truth of God's Word. Change in our world, but many times you're left asking, how can I make a difference? What do I do next? The truth is, we can do nothing. In our own strength and our own power, we will fail. But Jesus himself said to the disciples, I leave with you my spirit. In Romans 8:11, it says, if the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, he will also give life to your mortal bodies through his spirit who dwells in you. Let's step out in his power. Let's proclaim the name of Jesus in boldness and love. And when the attacks come from all sides, walk in the understanding that greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world, because the enemy has been defeated and his victory is in Jesus.